This is Brian Cambry with the news for the KVNF listening area, Thursday, March 22, 2012. In today's top stories, lawmakers need an extension on the budget, an annual state health report card results, a look at the new Cottage Foods Act, and with the arrival of spring, it's time to be concerned about hantavirus. Colorado lawmakers are asking to push back the deadline to introduce next year's budget. Monday is the deadline, but the budget committee is still in negotiations. Benta Berkland has more for us from the state capitol.
Last year, the budget was several weeks late, and lawmakers held closed-door meetings to try and broker a final compromise. Democratic Budget Committee Vice Chair Mary Hodge says she doesn't think that'll happen this time.
I'm pretty optimistic. I think we're doing some good work, and I think it's important that we do thoughtful, careful work.
Senator Hodge notes that it takes a 6-0 vote to pass a bill out of the Budget Committee. The committee's evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats. Hodge says there are several big issues still to resolve, such as a proposed delay of a property tax break for seniors. Hodge says the committee is asking to postpone the budget to April 3rd. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Colorado's annual health report card reveals the state has crossed a disappointing threshold. The Colorado Health Foundation found we are no longer the only state where less than 20% of the population is obese. From Colorado Public News, Carol McKinley reports that 22% of adult Coloradans were considered obese in 2010, up from 19% the year before.
The good news is Colorado is still the leanest state in a country which is growing increasingly fat. Colorado Health Foundation experts say it's because we refuse to say no to fatty foods. And in this down economy, there are more poor people buying cheap processed food instead of fresh fruits and vegetables. And kids in poverty can't find safe places to play, so they're gaining weight too. Other findings? Only 77% of Coloradans take their kids to the dentist. The good news? Most of us are physically active, at least once a month, and most teenagers say they're abstaining from sex. The survey found just over a quarter of them were sexually active, the lowest number in the U.S. Carol McKinley, Colorado Public News.
According to Colorado's iNews Network, the adult obesity rate for 2010 for counties within the KVNF listening area, that's Delta, Montrose, Ouray, San Miguel, Hinsdale, and Gunnison, was 16.7%. Those counties in Region 10 rank among the lowest obesity rates across the state. Douglas County, Region 3, had the lowest at 14.8%, and counties in Region 1 in Northwest Colorado had the highest rate at 25.3%. A week ago, Governor John Hickenlooper signed Senate Bill 48, commonly known as the Cottage Foods Act. Sponsored by Democratic Senator Gail Schwartz of Snowmass Village and Republican Representative Don Corum of Montrose, the Cottage Foods Act allows small home producers to sell a limited range of non-perishable foods directly to the consumer, exempting them from regulations that would otherwise require the use of commercial-grade facilities and equipment. Yesterday, I spoke with Monica Wheatnan of Small Potatoes Farm, who played a big part in getting this cottage foods bill passed. I understand you've been working on this measure for some time. Tell us about your involvement.
Well, I guess certainly when I was growing up, if ever you passed a farm stand along the road, there would be bread or cinnamon buns or jelly or something like that available. And so somewhere between when I was a kid and recently, these laws have been passed that don't allow farmers or anybody to do this. And it's an essential part of the viability of a farm. That's how farms survived through the winter. They were able to sell things all year round. It just seemed like it was, well, silly, unreasonable. I'm not quite sure how to put it. And then I read that Kentucky in 2003 had passed a bill that allowed farmers to do this very thing. Well, that got me thinking, and it got me showing up when Senator Schwartz was running for office to start with. And I'm not sure that I had this particular bill in mind. I just knew if you wanted to get anything done, your elected officials needed to recognize you at the very least. So I would show up. And then over time, I would talk about the Kentucky bill or what a difference it would make for me personally or for other farmers. And she heard the same thing all over her district. So she was more inclined to put together a bill like this. And we're just thrilled.
So I understand this bill was actually introduced last year as well and didn't make it. Is that right?
It was a different, slightly different form last year, and there was opposition to it from a number of organizations, and it was introduced very late in the session, and I think because of that, there wasn't time to work out all those differences. Last year was limited to farmers. This year, it's not. Mm-hmm. Any resident of Colorado can make use of this bill to make low-risk, value-added products in their home kitchens and sell them direct to customers.
This will affect local farmers in lots of ways. You've just talked about a couple of them. How else do you think it'll affect the local farmers and producers?
I'll tell you about my case first.
Okay, sure.
I bake bread, and people beg me for the bread. And, of course, if I give it away or give it to a nonprofit, it's perfectly good bread, and it's all fine. And up until now, if I were to sell it, I mean, you know, I couldn't have done it. And so it was just plain silly to have that division between what's allowable and what's not when it's perfectly safe food. And in fact, the governor, before he signed the bill, made a comment to the effect that, well, we all ate food that our mothers cooked. What's the big deal?
What was your experience like going to Denver for the signing?
Well, the signing takes about 5 minutes. And they were happy to see me, and actually everybody was happy to be there. I was told by one of the lobbyists that this was a real success story for this year. It was a truly bipartisan bill, and there aren't an awful lot of those easily getting passed this year. So I think everybody felt good about it. And yes, it was, well, it's, I guess, rewarding, but it's always also a little, leaves one a little uncertain to be called the champion or the face of the bill or something like that. But it also, of course, it was very nice that I was recognized as having put a lot of effort into this. And I did. I didn't realize until after it was signed how much effort I had put into it. And it was like the culmination of work for everybody. And so it's one of those things I actually would have hated to miss, because you put in all the work, but then it seems like that's the reward, is to be there for this final piece.
How soon will this bill go into effect?
It went into effect when the governor signed it.
And as far as we know, in order to be able to do this, one must meet the requirements of labeling and have a safe food handlers class.
And then, if you do want to make jams, jellies, preserves, because this bill does not allow canning and pickles, we tried, but wouldn't work this time, you must take a canning class of the sort offered by Extension. The foods are limited to spices, teas, dehydrated produce, nuts, seeds, honey, jams, jellies, preserves, fruit butter, and baked goods, including candies. So that's the range of possibility at this point.
And I understand there's a limit to how much of a certain item you can sell within any given calendar year. Is that right?
That's correct. There's a cap of $5,000 net per eligible item. So if you made strawberry jam, you could make up to $5,000 net on your strawberry jam. You could make raspberry jam. You could make peach jam. And that cap would apply to each one. In my case, I make at least 20 different kinds of breads, and I bake with a fellow that makes a different 20 kinds of breads. So those caps are no problem for me.
Sounds like the possibilities are endless.
I think so.
Well, Monica, thanks for coming in, and thanks for all your hard work on this bill.
Well, do I say thank you or you're welcome? Both.
While the bill is in effect now, producers are required to take a safe food handling class before selling their products, and additional rules apply regarding things like labeling. A safe food handling class will be offered tomorrow, for example, Friday, at 10 a.m. in Delta at Westminster Hall. The class costs $5 and you can register on site. For information on safe food handling classes in your area, contact your county Department of Health. A bipartisan bill that would recommend third graders repeat the grade if they can't read initially cleared the State House of Representatives on Tuesday. The measure was divisive for Democratic lawmakers, with some arguing it won't help children succeed academically. Here's Bente Berkland again with more from the state capitol.
Third grade is considered a crucial age in the education community because after third grade, instead of learning to read, students must read to learn. Studies also show a strong correlation between literacy and academic success, but the research is mixed on whether it's effective to make students repeat a grade.
Retention is not the focus. We want to be very clear on this.
Republican Representative Tom Massey of Poncha Springs is one of the main sponsors of House Bill 1238. In an earlier draft, the proposal would have required mandatory retention, but now it only recommends third graders who can't read be held back a year.
This is really about the very lowest of the low. These kids are classified as functionally illiterate, and these kids are destined to move on and drop out. So we want to do everything we can to engage parents, to engage teachers.
Democratic Representative Judy Solano of Brighton was the one sponsoring an amendment to remove retention from the bill. She says it's not a strategy even worth discussing.
We know kids that are retained are more likely to drop out of school or more likely to get in trouble with the law. Time and time again, we have heard that that is not the best strategy.
Other opponents are more concerned about the cost. Democratic Representative Sherilyn Peniston of Westminster says it's unfair to put a new financial burden on schools at a time of budget cuts and layoffs.
We have made massive reform changes to our educational system. And to come back again this year and have another massive bill, unfunded mandate, is something that at this point and for my district, I cannot support.
We have a problem. We can no longer continue to do what we do. We have to put a focus on reading.
Democratic Representative Rhonda Fields of Denver supports the bill and doesn't think children should move ahead if they can't read.
Our middle schools are not in the business for catching people up. High schools are not in the business for catching people up. And then when you go on to college, they shouldn't be in the business of catching people up.
For Republican Representative J. Paul Brown of Ignacio, the bill is personal. He says he and his wife had to fight with the school district to get them to hold back his oldest son.
And we finally won out. And a young man that probably would have been maybe in the middle of his class ended up valedictorian of his senior class. And I think it was because of that retention.
Governor John Hickenlooper says being held back also helped him. The governor made a rare appearance last week to testify in support of the bill in the House Education Committee. Hickenlooper is dyslexic and says he repeated seventh grade.
Back then, they didn't really know what it was. They just knew that I wasn't a very good reader. And so in first grade and second grade, they kept pushing me forward, and I kept not doing very well.
He says failing seventh grade was traumatic, but he wishes the interventions had happened earlier.
And I think back to how far behind that put me, and it was, I think, part of the reason I had a hard time through high school, even after I stayed back.
The bill would also require schools to meet with parents to create a reading plan for children who are struggling and talk to them about the long-term consequences. It still needs a final vote in the House before it can move to the Senate. I'm Bente Berkland at the State Capitol.
Rocky Mountain Community Radio is supported by the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, partnering with the Women's Foundation of Colorado to promote economic self-sufficiency of women and girls.
According to a story in the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, the Garfield County Public Health Department announced yesterday that a county resident has contracted hantavirus. Health officials said the resident lives in western Garfield County near the Mesa County line. The virus is not transmitted from person to person. Hantavirus is carried in the saliva, urine and droppings of deer mice, and the virus can become airborne when it's stirred up with dirt and dust. Most people become infected by breathing in the particles, although infection can also occur from being bitten by an infected mouse. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the virus can be deadly. Nearly 40% of those who contract hantavirus can die. Early symptoms of hantavirus infection include muscle aches, fatigue, high fever, dizziness, headaches, chills, and gastrointestinal disturbances such as nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and abdominal pain. Within 1 to 5 days, late symptoms consistent with respiratory distress, such as coughing and difficulty breathing, begin, health officials have said. Officials are urging citizens to take precautions to avoid exposure. They recommend residents who are cleaning up an area where rodents have been present should first spray the area with a bleach and water solution and keep it wet 5 minutes, then wipe or mop the area rather than sweep or vacuum it. Garfield County Environmental Health Manager Jim Ratta said it's not unusual for hantavirus cases to begin cropping up this time of year when many people are spring cleaning. Officials emphasize that deer mice, which are brown on top and white underneath, carry the virus, not small gray house mice commonly found in urban areas. And an update from the KVNF Sports Desk, Tammy Meck will be reporting next week on the 12th annual Hotchkiss Invitational Track Meet that is to take place this weekend, as well as other area competitions. Tune in next Thursday for that report. And finally, here's the latest information on sandhill crane counts at Fruit Growers Reservoir near Eckert. Sunday night there were 18, Monday 0, Tuesday night 22, last night again 22 were seen. There were so many last Friday night, approximately 1,100, and so little since then. Either the cold, wet, windy weather stalled their migration through this area and the numbers will pick up again, or we're at the tail end of the migration. Only time will tell. Meanwhile, if you have a crane story from this spring, let us know at news@kvnf.org. This concludes the KVNF Morning Newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.